And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome to another edition of our Smart Garden Show. This morning, Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota will be answering all of those lawn and garden questions. Mary, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, Denny. My gosh, it could be July 1st here with this weather. Wow.
I was, again, hearing Al's forecast, looking at the forecast I have, 84, 85, close to that tomorrow, and again, Monday. Then we'll start cooling off a little bit, but unbelievable. But I have to say, on the flip side, it's really dry. It is so dry.
Yes.
We need that moisture just drastically. We need rain every day.
We do. I actually got out my hose to water, do more extensive watering in the past few days than I have all summer with my garden.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's amazing. The warmest, the driest September ever. The last time I remember it raining, I think, was, what, August 29th, when we had quite a downpour, the very end of August. And since then, not a drop of rain, at least where I am. So
yeah, true.
Especially important for anything new that you planted this year, new trees, new shrubs, to water those.
Well, I was looking at we're getting tons of text messages already. By the way, if you have a lawn and garden question for Mary, call us or text us. Either way, one number will get you either 651-461-9226. Every week, and as you know, Mary, every week we get text messages, tons of them, about lilacs still blooming in September now.
Right.
What's up with that? Give us the reason for that. Maybe we can put an end to this.
Well, you know, I think Julie has written, and Weisenhorn, my colleague, has written a nice summary of this. But, you know, I think lilacs they're one of our great, reliable northern plants. They grow better in the north than they do in the south. But I think this is really an effect of the changing climate and the changing weather conditions. It has been warmer, it has been drier, and we've had these erratic temperatures that have affected lilacs. I think it's a sign of stress, actually. And anything that's blooming now, any of the lilacs with those flower buds we normally would see next spring. So if they're blooming now, they're not going to bloom next spring. Now, it's funny because some plants have a huge amounts of flowers. On others, right beside a plant with flowers, you'll see none at all. So we'll still see quite a few lilacs bloom next spring. But we also see the foliage loss, some brown foliage with leaf spot diseases. So I think it's really a response of the lilacs to the hotter, drier conditions. They would rather have cooler temperatures because they're really a northern plant. So there's really not a lot you can do. Improve the air circulation. Sometimes we have hedges that are big hedges of lilacs. If you can trim some of the plants out so there's better air circulation, that might help. But watering, if it's been dry, is really one of the best things to do.
Mary, this listener has an autumn blaze maple, 3 to 4 inch trunk. They found gouges on the trunk about 4.5 feet from the ground. Now, we've seen deer, they say, in our yard in the past. The tree looks healthy. Do we need to do anything about that, or should we install some kind of a trunk protector?
I would put on a trunk protector if you can. The maple trees, when they're young, have a thin bark. It's very easily damaged. And as the maples age, the bark gets coarser, rougher, and it's not as fragile. But when the trees are young and they have that thin, tight bark, it is quite fragile. Something could have rubbed against it or hit it. And so I would put on tree protector. You want to use I use hardware cloth or wire that stands out from the tree so it doesn't rub up against it. And still allows room for the tree to grow. And once it gets coarser in a few years, you can take it off.
Okay. Mary, let's grab a couple of phone calls this morning. First up, Diane calling from Minneapolis this morning. Thanks, Diane. What is your question for Mary?
Well, I have three issues here, and I think Mary already mentioned, talked about the lilac bushes. Now, my lilac bushes were attacked by that bacteria or whatever. lost most of the leaves and everything, and then it started getting new regrowth on the bushes. Well, surprisingly enough, I've got lilacs blooming now on these half-dead bushes, and I've even seen monarch butterflies landing on these blooms. I'm wondering what's going to happen in the spring with these bushes. And also, I have a maple tree in my front yard that was developed by the University of Minnesota. It's called a firefall maple tree. It's about, now it's probably about 6 years old, 7 years old. It's grown beautifully, and now I noticed on the top, the branches are being stripped, and it looks like something's eating the leaves or something, and I'm kind of concerned about that. And the third thing is my neighbor next door who has aster flowers, they are so tall this year and thick, but yesterday we stood and watched. There were hundreds and hundreds of bees on these asters. So with the bee population worry, we're wondering, is this a great site? So that is it.
Oh, thanks, Diane. So, yeah, so what's going to happen to your lilacs next spring? Well, hopefully they'll still have enough food reserves to flower and grow. So they are under a lot of stress and but have to put out leaves twice in a year, a big stressor. Put out flowers twice in a year, a big stressor. So I would consider watering them and doing any pruning if you can, but I'd wait to prune until the spring until you see any branches that are dead. But watering is the other thing I would think about. The maple tree with the top of that being stripped off, there might be some small animal damage with squirrels or birds or something, but if it's 10% or less, I would not worry about that. I think that'll probably be fine. It's 6 to 7 years. It's pretty well established. And the aster flowers, yeah, asters are a wonderful pollinator plant. So we're getting to the time of year where not a lot of things are flowering, and asters are one resource for bees. So the fall blooming aster is a wonderful plant to put in for pollinators.
All right, very good. We're getting lots of calls, too. Let's do this before we break. Susan is with us, calling in from Hopkins this morning. Susan, good morning. What is your question for Mary?
Good morning. I have a hardy hibiscus that I need to transplant from one house to another. And I'm wondering if I should try to overwinter it at the old place or if I can transplant it now. And if I transplant it now, what is the best way and the best time to do that?
You know, Susan, I would go ahead and try to do that right now. With the weather that we have, it sounds like we'll have at least another couple of weeks of good weather conditions. And I would go ahead and dig the hole at the new location first so you have that ready. And then dig up your plant, getting as much of the root system as possible that you can. You will probably have to prune it back by about one-third to compensate, take off some of the top to compensate for the root loss when you're digging it up, and then just keep it well watered once you get it into the new location.
All right, very good. Let's take a bit of a break. Barb, you're going to be next up on the phone when we come back, and we have a bunch of text messages as well. 651-461-9226 on our Smart Garden Show. Saturday morning here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on 830 WCCO. Denny Long here, along with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, answering those questions today. And as usual, Mary, we have many. We promised Barb she'd be first up here after the break. Barb, thank you. Barb is calling from Burnsville. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I had an arborist out yesterday to check a questionable condition of an oak tree. He diagnosed it with chestnut borer, which I will have treated, but he casually mentioned a tree registry and wasn't real specific, and I'm wondering if you could elaborate on that and tell me what my obligations might be. I have two oaks that he suggested, and the neighbor has a beautiful oak, and so I'm wondering if you could tell us more about that.
Oh, good question, Barb. I think he's probably referring to something a number of us have worked on for a while, and that is trying to document where the largest big, the oldest, biggest trees are in the area. So there has been some work on this city by city. Minneapolis, St. Paul, the Arboretum did a little bit of work on this as well. But you're in Burnsville, so I would contact pretty much every city has a city forester. So in your city of Burnsville, I would contact your city forester and see if they keep track of that. Otherwise, I could look that up and get you the references, but it's basically city by city. I can also look on the DNR, because the DNR at one time was keeping track of that largest and oldest trees in some of their state forests. I think that's what he's referring to.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Thanks, Barb. Let's grab one more call before we get back to the text messages. Carol is on the horn calling from Crystal. Hi, Carol. What is your question for Mary?
Hi. It's about hostas. Some of my hostas, about in the last month or so, the leaves are just getting dry and curling up like they were just burned by the sun, but they're not in the sun even. And the plant next to it is perfectly fine again, so what's going on there with them?
Yes, I see that on my own hostas as well, Carol. So this is just normal senescence or dying. It's toward the end of the year. And also showing the stress that we're seeing now in this month of September. So hostas are another one of our great northern plants. They do better in the north than they do in the south. So again, our longer season, hotter conditions, and dry conditions, the leaves are just dying for the end of the year. So I think hostas, they've got that big root system, a lot of stored food. I think they'll be fine next year. I think they're just, they're exhausted from growing.
Yes, I'm looking at another hosta question that came in a bit ago. Is it too late to transplant hostas?
No, I think you could go ahead and do that. You know, we like to have a month of good growing conditions for roots to establish in the fall. But hostas, if I really wanted to move some, I could do that now. If you have the time and you want to water them afterwards, that's really the critical factor right now. I'm doing some transplanting of some thyme that I have, and it's, even though thyme is really a drought tolerant plant, I don't want to water it all the time. When I'm planting it, where I'm transplanting it, I've got to put the water on it. And I it's too much, so I'm going to wait till spring to do that, because you've got to do a lot of watering with anything you put in at this point, because I don't know how much more it's going to rain this fall. And new transplants really need to be watered.
Interesting question via text, Mary. Is there a better or worse time of the day to mow the lawn?
Well, most the commercial guys, they're all mowing in the morning when you see them out there on the golf course. It's if you mow early, the chances are things will dry out. You don't want a lot of moisture laying or accumulating on the lawn itself. So early in the morning traditionally has been the best time. Anytime you can mow at any time that you will not that the lawn can dry out adequately afterwards.
Okay. Our old oak tree, Texter says, has dropped leaves early this year. Why do you think that is?
You know, it's just their response to the environment and stress. So sometimes, yeah, if it doesn't have enough water, it will eliminate some leaves if it put out too many this spring. Now, see, what we had was this really tremendous growing season in the summer with huge amounts of water. Some trees, you know, they put out 3 feet of new growth. That's a lot of foliage to handle. And now all of a sudden, there's very little water available. So in order to compensate for that, they will drop some leaves. So it's just a balancing act within the plant.
Okay. Before we break for weather, let's grab a phone call. Dan calling in from Clear Lake, I believe, this morning. Dan, what is your question for Mary?
Good morning, Mary Annie. Say, I've got a young fruit orchard. I planted over the last 2 to 4 years. It comprises of peaches, pears, plums, apples, apricots, and cherries. This last year, with all the rain, had a very bountiful harvest, which was great. But now the trees are done with that. And because they're younger, they've got several lower branches that I'm thinking of pruning off. I guess what my question is when should I do that, and is it dependent on the different type species?
You should do that, Dan, late in the winter or early spring. And all of these are the stone fruits, so they're all similar, so it's all the same. So late winter or early spring is the best time to do the pruning.
Very good. Hang on, Mary. We'll take a break and see what that forecast calls for, and then we'll have about another half hour of the show to go. Call us or text us, 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830, this is WCCO. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Mary Meyer from the U of M answering all of those questions. And I know, Mary, before we get on to other calls and texts, you did a little homework.
Yes. Gosh, I should have remembered this. The Big Tree Champions, the Department of Natural Resources, has a registry of Big Tree Champions across the state. They even have a video there of how to measure a big tree and a nomination form where you can nominate a tree. So, Barb, if you're still listening, you can look up many species of trees, and they'll tell you where the winners are and where they are around the state. So, and also if you wanted to contact your Burnsville forester, is listed easily to find as well. But yeah, it's fun to see what the biggest trees are. These measurements are basically the circumference or the around the trunk of the tree. It's not necessarily the height, which is a little difficult to measure, but you can, but it's really the circumference of the trunk.
Interesting. Thanks for doing that. A yard question. What can I do for my yard? The squirrels have dug all over, and now my lawn is all bumpy. We get this a lot. Is there anything I can do to level it out?
You know, not really. I have a bumpy lawn as well, and, you know, it might be uncomfortable when you walk over it, but it doesn't really matter as far as the grass growing. And in fact, sometimes the squirrels provide aeration for some of our heavier or more compacted soils. But from a lawn standpoint, it's really okay. It's really difficult to control wildlife. And so providing less habitat for squirrels, you know, fewer trees and things like that. Usually that's not a compromise that we want to take. So I haven't got really a good recommendation.
Yeah, we get that a lot. Good morning. Texter says, I'm interested in putting native flowers and grass near the border of our yard, which has a chain link fence around it. Would you recommend, or what would you recommend?
Oh, this is a great idea, because just as the caller earlier talked about all the asters and the bees that were on the asters, so there are a lot of native flowers that you can plant. Now in the fall, the asters, goldenrod are blooming. There are many different kinds of native sunflowers also. The silphiums are another nice native. Many of the native plant nurseries will sell plants or seeds that you can plant as well. I think I would encourage you to use plants in that, and you might want to put them out in front of the chain link fence. Sometimes it's nice if you can get behind the chain link fence to actually do some weeding or care from it from both the front and the back when you plant a border like that. But yeah, there are many native plants that will work out really well. Bergamot is also a nice one. And phlox, many of the different phlox that are native. So we've got lots of lists of these for pollinators. And The other thing to think about is something that flowers really early, like crocus in the springtime versus asters that flower late in the fall. But at the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, you can find lots of information on flowers for pollinators.
Yeah, and you were addressing there another question they had about location and mulch. Do I use mulch and how far, as far as spaced out from the fence? But you did some addressing to that as well. Some good ideas.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. I'm looking at, my ajuga has skinny, weird leaves this year in all of the gardens. Do you have an explanation for this condition?
Skinny, weird leaves. Oh, ajuga. So this is one of our popular ground covers. The first thing that comes to mind with unusual leaves or weird leaves might be herbicide damage. So drift from herbicide, the herbicides that are used on our lawns to control broadleaf weeds will cause disfiguration in other plants. Aphids also are another thing that can cause disfigured leaves. As long as they're green, I wouldn't worry about it.
Oh, okay. This listener, Mary, says we have several medium-sized cranberry bushes that are about 10 years old. This past spring, they were decimated by what we believe was the viburnum leaf beetle. Will the shrubs, do you think, rebound next year? And will we have to contend with this pest every year going forward? If so, how do we contend with this?
This is one of the new pests that we have encountered, and unfortunately, this beetle seems to prefer some of our native viburnums, and dentatum is one that it really likes a lot. Well, it depends how healthy and well-established the viburnum was. You could really can just wait and see. The other thing is try to be vigilant next spring. And as the young beetle, the beetle larva, it's these tiny little worm-like larvae that actually do the damage. And sometimes you don't see the damage until the larva has already matured and dropped off, and then you see the damage. So try to watch early and see if you can shake or remove some of those larvae. I am hoping that birds will decide this is a very good thing to eat and that we will have some predators that will take care of this. But it's a new insect. And as we know with the Japanese beetle, sometimes insects come in cycles. They will be really bad, and then they will be not so bad. Then, and as predators come into the picture. So I would be vigilant first thing to watch next spring, and hopefully your plants will be okay.
All right. Texter says this, Mary. In July, my Harrelson apple tree was full of immature apples. When I went to check on them a couple of weeks ago, there were no apples, none on the tree, none on the ground either. What could have happened? The only guess I have is raccoons. What do you think?
It might have been raccoons. They might have aborted in a June drop. We will see apples that overset with lots of fruit early will sometimes drop their fruit prematurely to get in balance with what the resources are that the plant has available. This year, I have a Zestar apple, and the squirrels were out there when the apples were about half mature. They knocked off the apples. They ate the apples. They moved the apples to their nest, their location. It was like, and I've had the tree for several years and never had a squirrel problem, but this year the squirrels got a lot more Zestars than I did. So it sounds like this person might not live right beside her tree or be able to watch it closely, but hopefully next year she will have more apples.
Yeah. Can creeping phlox be moved now? Texter wants to know.
You can move it if you're willing to really make sure you water it regularly. So because of the weather conditions we're having, I would say you could still do some transplanting, but water is going to be a limiting factor.
When do I dig up canna bulbs, and what is the best method for saving those bulbs?
Cannas will not survive our winter temperatures. They will rot if you leave them in the ground. So usually we wait until the first frost, and the first frost can kill off the top of the dahlias or cannas or calla lilies. And then once the tops are dead, then you can dig them up. I leave some soil around these bulbs or tubers, and you can put them in a bushel basket. You could put them in a cardboard box with some maybe peat moss around them if there's not much soil. The idea is you don't want them to totally dry out. You want some moisture, but not a ton of moisture. And then you want conditions that are about 40 to 50 degrees.
Okay. This listener, Mary, wants to know, can I cut back my Tiger Eye sumac now?
I would not do that. Tiger, I guess, is fall color that can be really nice. So I would not do that. I would wait until it's more of total dormancy or the leaves have gone from it.
Okay. A lot of tree questions, too, today. For example, Mary, we have an apple trees at our cabin in Zone 3. We close the cabin for the winter. Should I prune in early November or late April? Which would be better?
Late April is much better.
Okay. You have to help me with this, Mary. Is purple crown vetch invasive? It started showing up in my garden last year and is taking over a large area this year. How do I get rid of it? What is that?
Purple crown vetch is a legume plant, which legumes are good and they have the ability to fix nitrogen. Crown vetch was used extensively on highways by the departments of transportation, making this beautiful ground cover on embankments along highways. It does have a huge seed bank and it does have a persistent rootstock. And so it has become a barrier weed, a bigger problem in Minnesota. And so if you have that, most people do want to get rid of it unless it's on a very steep bank or a difficult site where no other plants will grow. But if it's in a garden setting, you definitely want to remove as much of it as possible. And cutting it back regularly or pulling it out is the best strategy, and never let it go to seed.
Very good. I'm thinking about earlier this morning about the Arboretum. I'm looking at a text. When will the maple trees at the Arboretum be in full color? What a great time of year for that.
This is one of the busiest times of the year. It's October. They have just started to color. Just a few of the trees at the Arboretum are turning fall color. Today is the Apple Fest at the Arboretum. And, of course, the Apple House is open now. Wonderful place to get all of the Minnesota apple introductions. So many things are blooming. The dahlias, asters, hydrangeas. Great place to take a walk, go out and visit the Arboretum. You do need advance tickets, especially if you're not a member or going on the weekends. But I looked this morning and all times are open, easy to buy those tickets online. And yes, go out and try some. Oh, and the scarecrows are out there.
Uh-huh.
Lots of scarecrows to see, and the pumpkin decoration. I helped to pick the pumpkins this week, the pumpkins and squash. So if you want to see a field of squash and pumpkins that you can walk through, yes, just go to the Apple House.
And what a great weekend for both, for sure.
Yes.
All right, let's take a quick break. Be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show, 651-461-9226 from News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. You mentioned it earlier, Mary, but again, I always like to tell folks if they have not checked out the university's website, extension.umn.edu. There's so much information. Great reading, no matter what time of year we're talking about.
Yes, that's right. We try to have timely tips for everything like harvesting your vegetables now, how to harvest them, how to keep them, timing. Should you be cleaning up your vegetable garden? Any insects or weed issues? You know, there's so many weeds that are setting seed now, and just cleaning up weeds, weed seeds that will be a problem next year that you can take out of your garden. So lots of timely tips. tips@extension.umn.edu.
Excellent. Let's grab a phone call before we run out of time. Mary, Bobby's calling in from Bloomington this morning. Thanks for waiting, Bobby. What is your question, please?
A quick one, I hope. My husband brought home a very large pot of esters, and I'm wondering, should I separate it, put it in the ground now? Should I try and overwinter them in the house? What do I do with them?
Okay, I think you said asters, right, Bobby? So, yes, right. I'd put those in the ground now. Most asters are perennials for us, and they're wonderful for late, one of the few flowers that blooms very late in the year and great for pollinators. So I'd go ahead and plant them and just make sure you water it well.
Okay, very good. Oh, go ahead, Bobby. Oh, I think she's gone. Okay. I'm looking at a text, Mary. Can I have sumac planted and expect it to grow? Any special size for a hedge?
Yes, there are many different kinds of sumac, from the low-grow one that's a ground cover to a tiger eye was one of ones we had a question about, and then large. The sumac is one of our native plants, so there are many different forms of that if you want to do a hedge. If I was going to plant a hedge, I don't think I'd do it this fall. I think I would wait until the spring, simply because the amount of root growth you want to get it established and regular watering, and if it's a large number of plants, I think you have a better chance of doing that in the spring.
Very good. This listener sent a text, Mary. It says, I have three new dahlia plants a friend gave me. They flowered all summer. Do I have to dig them up for the winter?
You do. Dahlias have that huge tuberous root, and they will not live through our winters. Usually we wait until the tops die down from the frost, and then you dig the big clump of roots. This is, dahlia tubers are going to look like a sweet potato. So they're a big thing, and you want to get as much of those as possible. Leave some soil on them. And just like the, calla lily we talked about earlier, you want them to stay where they won't totally dry out and at cooler temperatures around 40 or 50 degrees.
Okay. Dexter says this, we have a raised garden bed that is two railroad ties in height. A cluster of chives has lived beside this garden for 30-plus years. This spring, the chives have spread from outside of the garden bed to inside the garden bed. Do you have any suggestions on how to remove the plants from inside the garden? They seem to be wanting to take over.
Oh, chives can do this. Chives have a great root system that will they're good perennials that they will self-seed. So lots of the flowers will just drop that little black seed, and then they'll grow as seedlings, and so you can get more and more and more. I don't know, maybe you want to get a row of chives growing along that raised bed, but otherwise you need to dig them out with a shovel if you don't want them, because you'll have to take the root system out as well. And then you might want to cut off the flowers before they go to seed, because a lot of that seedlings will come up again.
Listener says, is it too late to move irises in the Blaine location?
Yeah, it's getting iffy. If you're willing to water them for a couple of weeks, then maybe okay. Fall is really, late summer, fall is really a time to move iris. It really depends on how much work you want to do watering them. I just am nervous about no water until we start seeing snow, and that is not going to make up the difference, that the deficit that we've got.
Mary, this listener says, I have cherry, apricot, peach, and pear trees, thornless blackberries, raspberries, and currants. When can I trim these?
Well, the trees are all in late winter, early spring. The blackberries, thornless blackberries, that's a good question. The thornless blackberries have not been one of the hardiest plants for us. So I would say that I would look on extension.umn.edu for the thornless ones. Usually you do some pruning right after the fruit is on berries.
Right.
Late summer.
Mary, I looked at the clock and we're out of time.
Oh.
It always goes by so quickly, but thanks so much. It's always a pleasure having you on the radio, and I know we'll talk soon.
Oh, yes. So fun to talk about gardening. Thanks,
Mary. Thank you. Mary Meyer from the U of M. Get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis next hour. Lindis Construction, of course, will help you out next hour. How about this high? Near 85 today. We dropped to 57 overnight. We could hit 83 tomorrow. We could hit 84 on Monday. Then we'll cool off just a bit. Right now, skies are fair in the Twin Cities. Our current WCCO temperature reading, 60 degrees. Stay with us.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the remarkable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.